Backstage. Let's listen to Marie-José Gagnon and her guest.
Today is May 16, 2023, and I'm interviewing Yulia Kovalev, the Ukrainian ambassador in Canada. At only 37 years old, a few days after the beginning of the Russian war in Ukraine, Yulia landed in Ottawa with her husband and their two children. Since then, she has dedicated herself to supporting the courageous Ukrainians fighting on the ground for their country and democracy. With her unwavering determination, Yulia's journey as a self-made woman is truly impressive. Tune in as we explore her remarkable story and gain insights into the war and the bravery of the Ukrainian people.
Good evening, Madame Ambassador.
Good evening, and thank you for having me here today. It's a big honor for me to be with you.
Yulia, if I may, I'm so pleased to welcome you at Brave. You know, I met with you a year ago. You were at the Chamber of Commerce of Montreal right after your nomination. And I was so, so impressed by you. It's an honor to have you, really. I know we will be discussing tough topics today, but I would like to start with a sweet question. I heard you really love Montreal and the people of Quebec.
Yes.
Can you give me more information about that?
Sure. And first of all, I will start that actually my first meeting with Canada was in 2015. And it was Toronto, a big city. Like our trip when I was working in the government, the trip just after the Washington, New York, and then Toronto. So I opened myself Canada in full, actually, only when, since I've arrived here last year at the end of March. And it was a really the hard time because the work was 24/7. And still, frankly speaking, it is. And also the huge responsibility because this is kind of like being an ambassador of the country who is fighting the war. It's a huge responsibility that it is on your shoulders. But in the same time, you're still a human being and you still want to find even those like 15, 20 minutes before running from meeting to meeting, just to look on the sky, to give yourself this motivation that, you know, at least like this sky is safe and thanks God this is safe here and you can work here. But also when I came to Montreal, it's very European. There is one thing in a job of the diplomat is that you usually miss home. And being here, feeling this beauty of the Europe and a great mixture of amazing North America, but still this charm of Europe, the French language, which I'm learning now, and I hope the next time we meet with you, I will be more fluently. I would dream more fluently speaking French here with you, and I'm trying really my best twice a week, early in the morning. So this feeling of Europe, this makes me feeling like more at home. And on the personal note, the first time we were with my family, we were traveling to Halifax, but we decided to go by car. And the thing is, because from the plane, you just see the airport and the airport. But when you are driving the car, you see the country. And we wanted to take this opportunity to see beauty of Canada. So we were driving, and our stop was, of course, Montreal. Then it was Quebec City. And we were walking on the street, and my son suddenly asked, "Mom, I'm mixed a bit. Because we haven't took a plane, but we are now in Paris." I said, "Okay, yes, we're almost in Paris." So it's not only me, but like my whole family feel this beauty and the charm of Quebec.
Yes, and you haven't talked about the amazing restaurants we have as well.
Yes.
Okay, so Yulia, you were born in 1985 in Ivano-Frankivsk, a town located in the western part of Ukraine. I want to know, what was it like to be an only child in the early 90s in Ukraine? And what were your perspectives on your future?
It's indeed a very beautiful country in the western part of Ukraine. The western part of Ukraine is very European. And it's close when you like look on the architecture, that there was an influence from Poland. There was an influence from Austria. So we have this beautiful architecture, small streets, narrow streets, and like this small beauty of the European capitals. But at the same time, it was, I went to school in 1991. It was the collapse of Soviet Union. It was the first days of Ukraine's independence. And I'm proud that the life I remember, I never was living in the Soviet Union. And I think it made a big impact on me as well, because the time I remember myself, I was Ukrainian. Mm. But that was a hard time. And that was the hard time for everybody in Ukraine, because after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the economy was shrinking. So my young parents were working a lot to provide a normal living for the family. They were both engineers. At that time, a lot of plants were closing down. They were not paid salaries. So at some point of time, my father, he dreamed to be a pilot, then he became an engineer, then the plant he was working, well, he was not paid the salary. So sometimes in the evening, he was a taxi driver just to earn the money for feed our family. And my parents, all the time when I remember them, they were working hard. They were changing their profession. So my mother graduated her second education in her mid-30s. She became a financial expert. My father also changed the job. And the thing I remember that sometimes I haven't seen my father for a few days, because he was getting up so early in the morning that I was sleeping and coming back home so late at night that I was already asleep. And I was the only child in the family. I think it's all together bring me quite an independent. So I still like looking on my kids and how we live through. When I was 7 and 8 years old, I was coming back from school alone. There was no cell phones. There were no even phone at apartment where we were living. So I went from school alone. I opened the door. I heated the meal for myself, and then sat down to learn the lessons and was waiting when my parents will come back after the work. And that was a normal life of many Ukrainian children at that time. So I think that all we grew up being independent and being like self-reliant from the very first years of our life. And I think it somehow probably influenced my life, understanding that, you know, you need to prepare yourself some food. You are the one who self-motivates you not to watch TV, but to do your homework. And then I went to music, which I hated for all 7 years when I was studying. But my parents said to me, we bought you a piano. It was a huge deficit to get it. Then my father said, I was bringing it to the 8th floor myself. So now you owe me to graduate from the music school. And I did.
Wow. When you look back at your younger years, what would be an important moment that have shaped you?
I think that was my big desire to study at the university in Kyiv, in capital of Ukraine. I think I was lucky to go to one of the best schools in Ukraine. And that was the culture in the school where most of the people entered the best universities in the country. So it was kind of the motivation to be among them, And I had this big dream. I wanted to study in Kyiv. My parents were against it because I'm the only child in the family. We have none of the, at that time, we didn't have any of the friends and relatives in Kyiv. It was seems so far away. If you think now in Canada, 200 kilometers is almost nothing. But at that time for Ukraine, it's quite a big difference having no mobile phone. So my parents said, no, we don't support. We want you to stay with us, being closer. It was a bit of selfish. But there is an interesting story which is related to Canada. The friends of our family, and they are now 20 years living here in Canada, they came to my parents at that time when we made the we were discussing where should I study, whether the parents support me in my university in Kyiv. And they came and they were talking, especially to my father, who was very conservative as the father of the only daughter. And they said to him, look, if she wants to live in Kyiv and if she wants to study, she will do it. No matter whether you will be supporting it or you will be opposing it. The only thing will be whether she will waste a few years here with you and then will do what she wants, or you will support her now and you will support like the goal and the dream of your child. And it worked. And still, when my father visited me just 2 months ago in Canada, he was remembering this conversation and saying, you know, that made a lot difference for... So my parents supported me and I entered the university in Kyiv. And that was, I think, the big moment for me.
You studied in economics?
Yes.
Why? What did you want to achieve with that?
I saw my mother working as the financial advisor. I was very good in math at school. I was usually participating in all of these math different like quests, and I was very successful really in math, physics, chemistry. So I'm more of that kind of the stuff. So I thought that it's not too mathematic. It still involves like some human touch, but that's what I thought I will be good at.
Can you describe those years when you studied at the university?
I still believe it were the best years, one of the best years in my life. So I was 16. I went to the new big city capital where I knew nobody. And I had a friend of mine with whom we rented a flat. And we were studying at the same university. And it was a good mixture of, on the one side, like being already independent because you live alone, but also still being young and, you know, trying to get everything good what the student's life can bring to you. And I think what my idea was to try to manage be everywhere and try to be like successful everywhere. So I studied a lot and I understood that I need to study good. So I was rather good in university. I've started to work very early, that actually as a volunteer in the university after the first year, then after the second year, I've got already the part-time job. And I was also participating in all of the students' events and sometimes nightclubs. Sometimes, you know, parents were like asking, where are you so late? So this is the best age where you still have this passion and energy to be almost everywhere and try to use this, I think, you know, this one of the best years of our life to live in full.
And you graduated with honors?
Yes.
Thanks to her disciplined and hardworking parents, Yulia had a solid foundation to unleash her talents. Her ambition knows no bounds, and you will be mind blown by her professional journey.
Julia, I look many times at your resume. I search on Google. I read the Kyiv Post. And I try to make sense of your career so far, okay? I have to admit, it's so impressive that it's almost unbelievable. Okay, for example, and follow me and tell me if I'm wrong. From 22 to 25, you were the CFO of Gazek. Huh? Ukrainian gas corporation of 15,000 people. Yeah. At 30 years old, you were first deputy minister of the economy of Ukraine. At 31, you were chairwoman of Naftogaz, which is probably a huge gas and oil.
The biggest company in the country.
Yeah, it's like Gazprom, but in Ukraine.
It's better, much better.
Much better. At 35 years old, you were deputy minister under President Zelensky. Is it all correct? Maybe I missed a few. I missed a few. For sure.
Yes, it's correct. But what is more important? I'm the mother of two beautiful children.
I was coming there. Yes. And she... Okay, let's continue then. But I want to come back to your career. And you are married. You've been married for 17 years.
Yes.
So you finished university at 20. You got married...
21.
21. You got married at 21. Tell us, okay, let's start with that then. Tell us, how did you meet your husband?
That's the most romantic story. We haven't knew each other, but being a student, as the only child in the family, I was traveling a lot back and forth from Kyiv to Ivano-Frankivsk and back to see my parents. So once, twice, or once 3 weeks, I was traveling, and the train was something very common to me, so I spent there a lot of life. He is also from Ivano-Frankivsk. I didn't know him, he didn't know me. And so first time when I was taking the train, he was taking the same train, so I was looking like, a beautiful young man. I don't know what he thought at that time. He gives me now for the 17 years very different versions of his thoughts. Then the train usually stops, and there is a big stop in Lviv. Very beautiful city, very beautiful railway station, very romantic. I was thinking, okay, I'm not so brave to come the first to meet and just to say, hello, my name is Julia. But I thought that, okay, if he will be walking on the way, I will come and probably will meet him. He is telling me the same story, that he'll say, I will be walking there. I thought if you will come, probably I will meet. And actually that happened. Both of us were walking by the train, and finally he said hello, and that's how we met. Wow. And I think the lesson is here, you need to do your step both, because if I were not there, or if he was not there, probably we haven't met. And since then we were like for more than a year really good friends. So we were chatting for hours on the phone and about everything. And then we started dating, and then we got married.
Yes. And you have two beautiful kids, like you said, a daughter, 13-year-old daughter.
Yes.
And a 8-year-old boy. I'm wondering, what is the foundation of your successful family life?
I remember a good advice as we were having the wedding, a really, very beautiful wedding with a lot of our friends. And there were one pair of our good friends who still were at that time a year already married. And they said to us, look, it's not a pinky every time. It's a hard job to build and keep the family together for years ahead. There will be good days, but there will be the bad days. And the advice is, if there are those bad days, try to meet them sometimes with humor. I was like, oh, okay, humor. But that is something that at the hardest moments keeps us not so serious about the problems we are facing. So keep a bit lighter, support each other. And I think what we have kept through all of these years of our marriage, it's really the friendship. It's something that, you know, you can sit down and advise. Or I can call my husband and say, like, look, I need your advice. Or he's calling me and say, like, I need your advice. Or he's criticizing me very often. He's my, you know, the strongest critics I have. It's my husband and my mother, which keeps me busy and it probably makes me a better person.
Earlier, you said while you were at the university that you wanted to succeed in everything. I look at you right now and I feel like you want to succeed at everything as well today. How do you make it possible? Because obviously you've managed your marriage well. He's with you right now, right?
Yes.
He's a lawyer.
Yeah.
And he's with you. What are the principles that makes your couple, you know, work well?
First of all, I think we Ukrainians, and I would like to raise the hands many of Ukrainians here. I think they are, if you are here, this is, and thank you for being with us. I think you all share that we Ukrainians are really trying to keep everything on our file, like kids, family, work, our home, our family dinners, our family traditions. So these are the things. On the one side, it takes a lot of time and efforts to keep them. But on the other thing, it's a really big battery charge for us as Ukrainian women. This family home, it's very important for us. It's an essential part of, I think, for Ukrainian women. And now, especially, we see that the bravery of Ukrainian women, it's something that I think the world see, is the women who are on the one side changing the role, and especially now during the war, taking with such a big honor, energy, and success the new roles. The role as a mother, the role as a woman, and the role as also the one who feeds the family because the man is on the front line fighting. And you don't have much choice. You just need to be everywhere. And a lot of this woman with children who now moved to another countries. It's a new country. You're alone. You're with children. Very often you don't know the language. And you want, but you have a big desire and a big aim and goal to raise your kids, to help your country, and to somehow stand firmly on your two own feet. And that, I think, in our DNA of Ukrainian women. So it's not something special. It's I think, we all Ukrainians are of that DNA.
You feel very Ukrainian.
I am.
Yes. So let's go back to your professional career. Very impressive. Tell me, can you go through the major stages of your professional life and explain to us the main choices you've made? And I'm also curious to know, what was the mission? What is your mission in your professional life? You've done so much, Yunda.
So my first thing, when I'm thinking about my career, and I was a student, on the one side, I was the only child of the family. My parents at that time working hard were quite successful in their career. But I wanted to be very independent. And also the independent in terms of like earning my own, being able to pay for my home, to pay for myself. And that was the first my motivation to start to work rather early. So I was studying, I was after the classes, I was going to work. Then late night, I was still back studying. Sometimes overnight, I was with all of my friends. And that's where it comes from. And then I think in all of my career, I believe that you could be successful if you love and you enjoy what you're doing. And maybe I will be too straightforward, and for diplomats that's not very usual, but I would say you cannot be successful if you treat what you're doing just as a job. We are spending so much part of our life on our workplace with the people with whom we work that if you don't like it, if you don't enjoy it, you're treated only as a way to earn money. I don't think it's worth of doing it. So you need to like it, because the work that you're doing is an essential part of your life. And that's why, you know, it's all linked together, because if you like it, you not only work, you live this part of your life in what you're doing. That means it's not that you're doing only the part of the job which is like in your job description. Usually you're trying to do more, you're becoming more curious what you're doing. Then you are working in your career. And that's how it all, you know, we call it success, but probably that's how you're becoming more and more involved. And then you love more what you're doing because you have some successes and it motivates you. So I don't believe if you don't like what you're doing, that will be a very successful file. This is the first thing. So I started my work in the audit company. That was a big audit company, one of the three biggest. But I think in 4 or 5 months, I understood it was a great experience. But then I understood I don't like it. And I said, like, I need to find something what I like, because I'm spending like 18 hours with all of these big Excel files. oh my God, I still like so bad in all this Excel thing. So so I thought that I need to change something. And then, you know, my future job. So I was usually working much more than it was like, you're like 6, 8, 10 hours. It was okay for me to spend some overtime, some weekend, or just doing it passionately more than it was expected. Probably that's why I was promoted. And really, every time I'm doing something, I enjoy it. The second thing, what's important, I believe it's a curiosity. You need to learn more. And it's hard, because the more you learn, the more you understand that there are much more things you don't know. And that's something becoming like, it takes more and more time. But every time this curiosity is driving you to grow up, to study, to learn more, to get like different courses, classes, read books, speak with people. And that's also is growing yourself as the personality. And in my career, I think the very changing moment was in 2014. It was just in Ukraine in December 2013, there was the Revolution of Dignity. It started with Ukrainian students and Ukrainian youth who went up to Maidan Square, the square in the center of Kyiv, protesting over pro-Russian policy of that time president that refused to sign the important agreement into more European future of Ukraine. And that was what we Ukrainians believe is the future of Ukraine. And we believe, and now we are already a candidate for EU membership. So we all went to Maidan as protesters. And the president flew the country. We had the new election. And there was a big call for many young people from the private sector to join the government. And there was a call saying, like, okay, you are the young people who went to stand for those European values, to stand and show your voice that you want to build on the new country. Here is a chance. And we welcome the young people to join the government from the private sector, from working, from abroad. Come and build country. And I think this was a big, big wave. We have a lot of people from the private sector at that time, very young, there were people of 25, people of 28, people of 30. So the average age of the government was 42. Like, you can imagine, it's quite young. And it was impressive because you imagine, like, the government in Ukraine, sometimes in a very tough discussions. It was the time when Russia first invaded Ukraine, occupied Crimea. And the country was almost bankrupt. We have $40,000 on our government account. We don't have much gas, electricity, coal, because Russia also cut the supply. We had at that time not well-prepared military staff, so we lost 10% of our economy. Inflation was 45%. And, you know, this all, there was only one chance for us to survive. It's to work out of the box and to work quickly and to have people who are capable to restore institutions, to build the new ones, and to address all of these challenges. And sometimes the government was discussing things, but there were a lot of people who worked in a international investment banking, who were working on in different countries as of Ukrainian origin, which came back to Ukraine and joined the government. So sometimes the government meetings were held very emotional in English because a lot of people, you know, has been speaking English a lot, so they switched in the crisis situation. And those who were not speaking English saying like, oh, we don't understand. The only answer was, you need to learn English. But that was a big call, and that was a big challenge because I was also got it one day a call and said, like, would you consider working in the government? You worked in the sector. You were with us in Maidan. Now it's the turn to try yourself to work for the government. And frankly speaking, I hadn't spent much time thinking about, like, I for like this all ethics things. I said, okay, I will need some time to think, but I made the decision. I made the decision that I want to try because this is the chance for us, for the new generation of Ukrainians to try ourselves, not only to criticize, not only to stand and protest, but also to join the government and said, we are the ones who can build and will build the country.
Yeah, I found a quote. You said in the Kyiv Post in 2016, we have a lot of paternalism in people's head. The state can't be the mother and father to everyone. People have to try to understand that they really are the owners of their lives and the owners of their own success.
Probably I was a bad politician because people usually don't like to hear these things. But yes, that was the time of the hard decisions for the government. Because a lot of what we had was the inheritance of the Soviet Union with still a lot of, you know, saw that there is somebody else. So there is the people and there is the government, but it's totally like different people who should decide. They have the magic stick so they can fix all the problems at one moment and they can decide on behalf of everybody else. What we were trying to do through the path of very tough decisions, hard reforms, is to encourage people, and I think, you know, that Ukrainians are that way, to be the owners of our own destiny, our own country, and our own future. And I think what now, and that was the discussion inside Ukraine, but I think what now it's quite obvious for everybody that we Ukrainians are the ones who really stand for ourselves.
They certainly stood for themselves on February 24, 2022. Yulia has witnessed firsthand her people rising to the occasion and impressing the whole world.
The test for the bravery, it was the I think the biggest example for many, many decades, what is this simple test of the bravery? Are you yourself ready to sacrifice your life for the life of your country, for the life of your children, for the life of your parents? And we are now, it's a brave, it's a brand of Ukrainians.
I know. Yeah, courage and Ukraine, but it's funny that you said that, you know? So the circumstances made that happen. And tell me, were you surprised when you saw the resistance, when you saw the people of Ukraine, you know, out there, since you knew were you surprised by the level of courage and the level of resilience and resistance?
No, not at all. And I would say what I was surprised that few months before the war, there were a lot of articles, there was a lot of media, there was a lot of discussion of the potential Russian invasion to Ukraine. What I was really surprised is hearing from a lot of people from the West this disbelief in Ukraine. So there was a perception that, you know, that Kyiv will fall in 2-3 days, in a week, in 2-3 weeks. And I think people, when talking, there were the people like saying, like, probably you need to find a place where you will move, you, the part of the government, from the civil society, and other capitals, some European countries, because like Kyiv will fall, and you know the need to for the young Ukrainians need to find the place. And I said, like, look, it will not happen, because this is the 40 million country. So we are very close in terms of the number of population. And this is this one of the biggest countries in terms of the territory in the European continent. And this country and we Ukrainians want to live in our land. So you cannot say that 40 million a country will flee somewhere. We will fight. We will fight till the end, because there is not much of the choice. And historically, we have been fighting for our independence, for our sovereignty, that is in our DNA. But I would tell another story, which already happened with me in Canada, and I got today, I will not quote from whom, but one of my now good friends in Canada. I came here at the end of March, and in April, I was first time in Montreal. I was meeting with the group of people, and I said that yes, Ukraine will win. And it was only like few weeks of the war. And that person told me today that, look, you looked at, on the one side, you at that time looked so naive, because everybody in the world still were watching how it all will end up. But the person told me that, but also on the other side, you looked so confident in this victory that it was like sharing with the other people. And I said, but now I understand that you are right. Ukraine will definitely win.
Yulia. Tell us, where were you and how did you feel on that day, February 24, 2022?
I was with my family. I was in Ukraine.
In Kyiv?
No, I was in Ivano-Frankivsk, and because the next day my kids and my mom had the tickets and they should have fly. It was spring vacation, so they were like 4 days trip, and we got around 5:15 in the morning hearing explosions. They were very close, and you're still sleeping, you wake up, you just see what's happening. And then, you know, I got the message, the war started. And I still keep this message. And I still keep in my iPhone this first articles that were coming as the war started. Of course, my first call was to my parents, asking where are you, and so you just I was waking them up and saying, like, guys, let's go home. And the second call, the call which my daughter got from her friend, her friend moved from Donetsk when she was 5 years old, and her father just took her from the apartment where they were living when the missile hit the building. So her father was just carrying her on his hands from that building. So they moved to Kyiv. She went to the school. So she started actually a new life in Kyiv. And she was calling my daughter, crying and screaming and saying, this happens again. I don't want to live one more time this horror of the war. And you can imagine, it's like 12-year-old children living the second time in their life the horror of the war and feeling very deeply that they already had this experience and they don't want it to repeat again. That was, I think, the hardest, because we adults, we are more like, brave probably, but hearing this crying of two 12-year-old girls on the horror of the war, it's something what I'm still keeping with myself on these emotions. And that's why I think we all need to understand that Ukraine will and Ukraine needs to win the war. Because otherwise, we don't want our children to live another war. And we saw it back in 2015 when there was a ceasefire. People were saying about the peace talks and so on. Russia used this time to prepare for the war. And for me, understanding, how this 12-year-old girl was crying the second time, we all Ukrainians understand that we don't want it to repeat again. That's why when we are talking about the peace, we are talking about the sustainable peace. Not the peace that will take another 5-7 years and then Russia will attack again.
You were talking about feelings and emotions. Can you describe how your feelings and emotions have changed or have evolved over the last year and 2 months?
It's hard. I'm still crying. I'm still cannot read and watch the videos of this destroyed apartments, of the stories of Ukrainian women, mothers, children. I often read and I still cry in the evening. But what changed is also from the personal story. But before the war, 2 weeks probably before the war, we tried with my husband to talk with the children, what if the war starts. It was a very theoretical talk. I've read some articles. I was trying to read some books. It was something unrealistic. And I remember we took to our kids. We sat on the table during the dinner and we said, like, kids, what will you do if there will be a missile attack? We didn't know what is the missile attack. Nobody knew. It was only, during seeing it on the TV. And frankly, there was no script that was written what should you do. So we were almost like brainstorming and saying, like, here is your school, here is the closest parking lots underground. So if something happens, there is the place. You, as the older daughter, need to pick up my son, Nazar. You need to go there. And this is the place where we can... But it was... so unrealistic. Now I'm coming back and forth to Kyiv. You know what to do when there is the missile attack. And also Yeah, not afraid at all. At that time, because you don't know how it will be, there was a lot of, you know, discussions. People were, there was an unknown what will happen. Now I think that there is a big clarity on what needs to be done, what is the path of our victory, and how each of us Ukrainians is putting our own efforts into this victory. So we know what to do. We are very capable as Ukrainians on doing that. And we know what we need. And I think that's a totally different approach. It's still all like feel of pain. It's still very hard. It's still very hard to read and to know each of the week when somebody very close with whom you work, with whom you went to school, who was your neighbor, he or her are dying on the front line. Still, this pain, you know, it cannot change you. It's still a huge pain, and you still understand how much we all Ukrainians are giving for this victory.
Yeah, so working at the embassy, what is your contribution? How do you measure success, your daily success? What are you aiming for every day to contribute?
First of all, I have a wonderful team in my embassy, and I'm very lucky that when I arrived in Ottawa, I was never a diplomat before, and my team helped me a lot and is helping me a lot to navigate in all of the nuances of diplomacy. I really appreciate their work. I think I'm not the easiest boss, and part of my team is here. They are smiling, I know. I think because of this big responsibility, because being Ukraine's ambassador now, it's a big honor, but also a huge responsibility to your country. Understanding that every day you can do something to secure support to Ukraine, to help many of those Ukrainians who came here, to promote Ukraine, to tell the story, to open hearts of the people, that leads to like a more support, bringing unity on both the diplomatic front, on the supplying Ukraine with the needed military support, financial support. It's very intensive work. It's frankly almost 24/7, especially because you have 7 hours difference. Kyiv, sometimes we have the meetings which start at 3 a.m. in the morning, Ottawa time. It's already 10 a.m. in Kyiv, so sometimes it's at that part. It also brings you on the need to be on so many files each day. Either it's the justice, either, you know, you need to understand what is 155 caliber, what is tank, what is fighter jet, so you need also to be deep in that file on a lot of diplomatic front and like international institutions. So there was no way when I arrived that there is some time that you can learn. I was like full 150%, and I could say, on doing it. And I still, why I am a very hard boss, because every Monday we have a big team meeting, and I'm saying like, look, if we all could feel sometimes tired, exhausted, just remember that there are men and women just now in the trenches, on the front lines, and we are the ones who can help them. My uncle is on the front line, and he's sharing with me that the day when and they are getting more military support and they are fighting well equipped with Russians, this is the day of their joy, their glory, and their happiness. And that I'm saying that, you know, this is a historical time, both for us as Ukrainians in our country, but I think for all of us as citizens of democracies. We are fighting not only for Ukraine, but we are fighting for these values that unite us as the democratic world. And that's why it's in these historic times you need to go to bed every evening understanding that you've done your most, your 100% to secure and support the victory for Ukraine.
Yulia, I have 20 other questions, but I will. I will just concentrate on a few, a last one, and then the brave questionnaire. How do you now that you know? You told us that you were so clever, right? You saw very, you were very very clear on what was going to happen with Ukraine a year ago. You said we will win. Tell me, what's the future? What's the, you know, we're in a year. Where do you think we'll be?
In a year. Of course, we will be already at those stage where we'll be celebrating with you our victory, our joint victory. But also, it's a hard work ahead for all of us Ukrainians being then in need to rebuild the country, to bring people home, because the country is the territory and people. And the people, us Ukrainians, now throughout all of the world, we need to bring them home and we need to rebuild the home because they need to have the home to come back. And I think this is a big work for us to win the war and to rebuild our home.
Thank you. So let's go to the brave questionnaire.
Okay.
What do you do every morning to give yourself courage?
It's very easy. I read the news and I remind myself that I'm Ukrainian and we Ukrainians are brave. And that is actually every morning what motivates me.
What does it mean to you to be brave?
To stand up for what you believe. It's very easy and very hard at the same time. But that's really making the choices and standing up, even when it's hard, even when you know that you can lose. And now we understand that you can lose the life. But standing up for what you believe, it's the bravery and courage.
And what do you say to yourself to encourage yourself?
I'm Ukrainian.
Period. At what point in your life have you not been brave?
And my first job interview. I thought I don't deserve it at all. Yes, I was not brave. I thought that I'm not too smart. I don't have enough experience and so on. And I failed it completely.
Which person best embodies courage in your opinion?
Probably a little bit pathetic, but for me, it's every man and woman who are now fighting in the front line. It's the biggest sacrifice that each of us as the human being can put for the big purpose. It's our life. And I think they are.
What do you want to say to young people to encourage them?
Be leaders and also at the same time, be clear what you're standing for, what you would like to be, and stand for it and do it. I think it's very easy and very hard, but don't waste time on the things which does not bring you harmony and does not bring you passion in your life.
Yulia, thank you so much for your courage, for the courage of your people, and for the great lesson.
Thank you.
Yulia owns her success to herself, her hard work, and her belief that anything is possible, even coming from a small town far from the capital. She left the private sector and committed herself to her country, seizing the moment despite challenging circumstances. Today, through perseverance and certitude towards victory, even if she's abroad, she serves Ukraine in tangible ways while her compatriots fight in the trenches. This being said, balancing life and war must not be easy every day. Dear Braves, thank you for listening, and until next time.
Brave, the interview series showcasing the stories of women who dare to be brave, is an original idea of Marie-Josée Gagnon. Dare to visit our website at braveinspiration.com, as well as our social platforms. If you enjoyed this podcast, dare to subscribe and share it. Thank you for listening.